When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back. Another episode of D&M's with Dean. On this episode of the podcast, I sit down with a psychic, a podcaster, and an author, and an all-round amazing person, Zara Molstead. And now, you know when you get around those people that you just feel instantly comfortable with, that make a really safe space to be your true vulnerable self? That is the kind of person that Zara is, and she is incredible at making you feel safe and giving you kind of the power within yourself to kind of heal yourself and see what you need to be healed from and help you on that journey. So it was really good to sit down, chat with her, and kind of help me open up my own healing journey and see the things that she's doing with not just water, but with spirituality, and then looking within the different, I guess, realms of channeling, healing, and just spirituality as a whole. So really enjoyed this chat with her and just enjoy being around her in general. She's just a really nice, humble, soft, kind person to be around. So I really hope you guys get a lot out of the chat we have. Before we get into it though, quick word from the sponsors. If you guys are trying to spice up your morning routine, no better way to do it than with AG1. Now, one scoop of this in the morning, it's going to start your morning off right. Good for gut health, good for your immunity, and just tastes great as well. So if you guys want to jump on that, I'll throw a link in the bio and you guys can get 1 year free supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. Just follow the link, follow the prompts, and you'll figure it out. But now, without further ado, here's a podcast with Zara. Do you feel like that in your line of work with being a psychic and obviously feeling different energy channels and everything that comes through, you feel that very clearly when something doesn't sit right or feel right?
It goes both ways for me. So yes, I can feel it, but I can also get wrapped up in their energy web. So for example, the Julian Assange saga, I can feel what everyone's going through in that desire to fight and to stand up. And so I kind of got wrapped down that lane a bit, but I needed to come back and stand in myself. Okay, what is my mission here on this planet? What am I here to do? And that's actually to just really hold for the self. So I can feel where it doesn't sit right for me to a certain extent, and I can also really feel what other people are going through, really feel the pain, really feel the saga, the drama, and that's why I can tune in so well. But as long as you're connected in with the sovereign aspect of self, it's always clear. It's always really clear what you need to do. So through having that experience with Kim and Natalia, it's led me to you, and we're sitting here now, right? And also that connection, I think, when they're ready to go deeper levels of what's actually going on, they've positioned themselves so well, you know? So, yeah, it's a yes and a no there.
How do you find the best ways to get back to yourself is?
sitting in the breath. Yeah. Sitting in the breath. Really sitting still, sitting in a room by yourself or in nature, going out into the wilderness, into the water, and coming into your own space. Because we can get thrown around a lot with different energy currents on the planet or with someone we love. And then we mix and we mesh energy fields and then we don't know who we are anymore. And that's one of the most common misnomers, I think, that's running, is that we need to have someone else in our life to feel good. And when we do that, we completely lose who we are and the sovereignty of being in our own skin and that connection with our own soul and our own soul stream. So I'm not saying don't do relationship. I'm saying do relationship for what it's worth, which is very much, what am I here to share with you? What are you here to share with me? Okay, great. And then let's go to our own space, maintain our own sovereignty, our own sovereign self, and come back. Because our energy fields can do some really crazy things. They can actually warp and they become mixed up with whatever or whoever we're around. And so if you go into the breath, if you go into nature, it's going to clear your field instantaneously. And that's something I think that is so vastly underrated for anyone working in this space called Earth, then it needs to come more to light. But it is about moving back in the rhythm with you. So we can learn from others. We can learn from teachers. But don't let anyone ever override what you yourself feel or think.
You want two people to be a whole before they try and before they meet each other. So many times you won't be full, like you won't be whole. And you go into a relationship and that person will obviously make you feel good, lift you up, and do all these things that feel great, but you're not whole as a person, so you're not bringing your full true self to that relationship. And I think that's always going to be a part that makes it suffer. And you know, the whole idea is like, you don't know what you got till it's gone. It's like you can't appreciate what you got until you sit with yourself to actually to see what it was. And it's so often that people just are always together, like always every day they'll be together. And they kind of don't ask themselves, like, what do I want? Mm-hmm. Where do I want to go? What do I actually feel? And then you say, like, once you take out those distractions and you go back to the breath, you go back to yourself, you go, oh, that's where I need to be and that's where I need to go. And like you say, when you're in nature as well, it's like a calming feeling that comes along with that. Do you find when you do support work or do see people, is it, what's the most common thing you have people kind of coming to you for? And then what's the most, not surprising, what would you say, what is like the simplest thing that changes quickly? Like what, with your advice or what you do with them?
My work is to help heal the heart, because everyone here on planet Earth, no matter who we are, we're looking to become whole. And the only way to go into that space is to look at every karmic thread that's ever run. So if I work with people, or when I work with people, and the whole premise of my book is to come back to the self, come back to sovereignty. And so that idea is a theme through anything that I will do, right? And it's, the work exists so that you can be you. And when we become the fullest version of who we are, then we really have the opportunity to not just change our own lives, but the lives of everyone around us and the frequency here on planet Earth. And so the work in itself is kind of a misnomer, because I don't do anything and I'm not supposed to do anything. I'm supposed to sit in presence and in space with someone to inspire them to become the greatest version of who they are, because they have everything they need right inside. But sometimes we have blocks or thoughts or ideals or energies that can stand in that way. And so my function and role is really just to move those out so you can see a bit clearer. So you can see who you are from an unlimited vantage point of source energy. And source energy wants you to know that you are the greatest gift that has ever been given to this world.
It's funny you said that. I wrote something down that I read on your website, and it says, no one can heal you as the truth is. You are already whole. True healing occurs when you remember who you are.
And that is the gift of this time-space dimension, because you can do that here. You can't necessarily do that anywhere else, because you have all the resources and the tools around you in any given moment in time, regardless of where you stand, to know you. And this is the place that we walk in, is blinders on, blocks on, but you can take them off if you sit in the breath, if you sit with nature, if you turn off your phone, if you put down the relationship when the timing calls, because every signal on this planet is leading you back there to that original essence of creation. That's the bit that we tend to forget as human beings, because we have so many distractions. We've got relationships, we've got friends, we've got people, places, all these fun things that we can do here on planet Earth. And then we have AI, and we have all the digital currencies, and all of that is leading us away from the organic realm of creation, because you are the greatest technology that has ever hit this Earth. The physical form contains it all. You can change timelines, you can change water structure, you can change your life, your ideals, your beliefs, literally just with a little thought from within. And then that starts to create a current and a flow and an energy field that emanates from your heart. But we have to do the work to get there. We need to, one, first of all, stop listening to anything outside, become sovereign with your own breath, become sovereign with your own rhythm. What is your soul desiring? What is your soul's choice? And when you start to do that, you begin to see who you really are. You begin to see yourself as God.
Do you reckon we try and create our own gods? And that's something that I look at with AI, is trying to create something all-knowing, all-seeing, all-powerful. Like, we're trying to create our own version of what we believe God is.
We're looking for that reflection of the self. So we look outside to validate the internal mechanisms of creation. So I agree with you on that. We're looking, whether it's a teacher, a mentor, a guru, a deity, a government, a corporation, a product, a phone, all of that is actually a signal to come back in, because you've got the internal mechanism, the internal switch to create greater than you've been given in the external world. And all of those deities are just showing aspects of who we are, because we're an infinite field of life. The intelligent system, the intelligent design of this manifest world has gone far, far, far beyond what we can possibly fathom.
What would be your definition of God?
Kasyutukunayanasya. You. Your stream of energy from the original source creator. And so that definition is you, and that's reflected in me, and that's reflected in each and every person, object, thing that exists here on the planet. And when you know that you have available to you an infinite energy stream of creation, and you know how to use it, then you create miracles, and you create realities, and you create worlds. And that original essence of creation has been held by a few. There's been a few on this planet that really know how we work as individual mechanisms of source light. And they've been using it to twist and distort reality so that you, me, most of the population doesn't understand how to control their own thought forms. So when I look at God, I don't look external, I look internal. The internal wisdom comes from within. I look at God as the mechanism of creation here on the planet and the creator. It's all one. So if we come up to source light, we actually look at the internal dialogue within the self reflected in the external holographic nature of the world. And as you look at the external holographic nature, you see how you create. So your words are the first and most powerful thing inbuilt in human design. What you say, what you breathe, what you think is going to give you a linear focus in this reality. So what are you focusing on? That's your power right there. And when you use that power with your words, you start to begin to manifest new life. And so when you look at new life, what do you want? And everyone on this planet will have a different answer to that based on the rhythm of their soul. Does that make sense?
And like you say, it's the source of where that comes from as well.
Exactly.
The source of where your purpose, what your soul resonates with, where that comes from. But I like the whole, yeah, God's kind of within all of us because we're all part of that creation of light and that certain vibration, because it is the thing that we are all connected. But I think it seems, especially in a time like this, there's a line I heard and it said, connected to everyone you've ever known, but never so alone. And I think that hits pretty well at the moment with where like society is going, and you can be connected to every single person you've probably ever met in your life, but we all feel so alone at the same time. And I think it's getting worse. And it's like you say, how do you get back to yourself and understand what you want to do and what is okay for you? And then obviously in doing that, you'll probably find the people that will make you not feel alone anymore.
The trick of this reality field is to have relationship dynamics that feed the soul. People around you who are going to point you back to you. Because when you find you, when you find that original essence, you sit there and you're in eternal bliss, and you're in happiness, and your love, and your joy, and you need no one else. You need no one else to fill that void. Because there's always a void in the room for each one of us unless we find the heart. And when we find the heart, when you go real deep right in here, you start to become a magnetic attraction for that same energy, that same blueprint, that same source of life. And this is what we've all been missing. This has been the frequency of fear overlaying the entire planet, the entire population. And the only way out of that rhythm and cycle is to go within. And most people are going to look, and you know, myself included, especially in my 20s, in childhood, you're looking for someone else to fill that void. You're looking for something else to fill that void. And a lot of us, I think probably you included, correct me if I'm wrong, found it in extreme sports. I used to jump out of airplanes every Saturday and Sunday because I felt such joy being in the present moment. And that was the only way I could find it because my mind wouldn't shut off. And when I had my first child, I couldn't do that anymore because all of a sudden fear came in, right? And the only way I could find that connection again was sitting in the present moment with myself. And it took a while to get there. But once I found that space, I didn't need anything extreme anymore. I didn't need to surf. I didn't need to skydive. I didn't need to, ride down hills really fast because I like that too. But, you know, I didn't need it. I enjoy it, but I didn't need it to really fill the void. It felt like all of that was to fill the void.
And the whole idea of like altering time, it's like you're altering your own reality in those moments. And we always talk about it on here, but the whole idea of like a flow state that you get into when you're doing something like that, and time shifts, reality moves. It's like all these things in your mind become so different and you can't explain it. And it just, things just work. Your body works in the right ways and it's addictive. And like I've raced for 17 years and probably felt it maybe 7 or 8 times. And you look at it like that. And there's been 2 times I felt flow state, when I was racing and when I've been talking, like whether it be on a podcast or really like from the heart, when you're almost on autopilot and you're so passionate about something. And it's happened a few times, and I can't even remember exactly what it was, but something about where I was at in life, and I was really happy, and just I was explaining something, and you see this look on people's faces where they don't even want to try and speak because they're so invested into what you're saying. And it almost get to the end of speaking, I'm like, oh, am I bored? It's almost like you seem like you're boring them, because they're almost like in a way glazed over, but it's no, they're so invested in what you're saying because you are speaking from the heart and you are being extremely honest and like vulnerable and just like you, and people see that and they're so attracted to it. So there's like the only two things I've ever done that I've actually felt those ways, and lo and behold, I race for so many years and then I've started up a podcast and I'm trying to get in that same thing. So it's like we chase after that feeling of like, again, like filling that void or feeling that. Like I always told kids and stuff, I'm like, if you can put yourself in that flow state, no matter where you end up on a results sheet, you're winning. Because like I won a heap of races. I only felt that feeling a handful of times. And I know which one I would go back and feel over a win or whatever it may be. It's like you want that feeling of I guess it's what monks and stuff do, is when they sit and it's that pure presence in a moment. And it's so hard, I find, in this, not even just this day and age, but just in life in general, to really be present in a moment and appreciate it in all its beauty and not be taken away by a thought or a feeling or a smell or anything, but just be so very much present in that moment.
That's where the earth can help, because the earth will clear the electromagnetic grid of the body, and it will start to dissolve thought forms. Or if you jump into a body of water, especially something salted like the ocean, you'll start to come home to presence. And you don't need necessarily the earth's energy current to do it. You could sit in your own space, whether you're in a city, whether you're in a barn, doesn't matter. But if you can find that rhythm of the heart and start to circulate that energy there, you've found God. You've found the presence within. And then that radiates in your space. And people are magnetically attracted to you because they want to know what that's like.
They've seen you touch it. I was going to ask you as well, what's your relationship with death?
Death and I are like best friends because I've seen it so many times. In my own life and also in others that I love. And I've seen it from a perspective that I think many maybe don't have eyes to see yet. So if you look at death, it's actually a transition point. You're altering reality streams, you're altering current, you're altering flow, but you're not gone. And so death doesn't scare me. Death is a doorway. But where am I going when I get to the other side? That's the question. Because just like right here in this room, we have many choice points. Or throughout your day, you have choice points. Am I going left? Am I going right? Am I sitting here? Am I sitting there? And that can alter the shape of your reality. And if you move against the soul's direction, you could create a completely different frame for the next moment. I could choose to sit next to someone on an airplane that's going to completely alter my reality. Or I could say, oh, I'm not going to sit there. I'm a little, my thoughts can take over and I can go somewhere else. It's just like that on the other side. You can move into many different versions of reality. And that's why I see strengthening the heart's internal flow and mechanisms here on the earth plane as the most important thing we can do in this lifetime. And begin to understand the processes and the mechanics of what make up the human heart and the human soul. Because it's by design that you've forgotten. I've forgotten. We've all forgotten here until we wake up. And when we wake up, then we can start to make free will choice. So death came to me really early on. My mom died when I was 10. And I started to see her awaken in her last moments because she was looking for religion. She was looking for God. And so I went to a Baptist school from the time I was maybe 5 or 6. And they really instilled fear into your reality field. If you don't worship this God, if you don't worship this one, not the one the other churches are worshiping, then you're going to hell. And so there was so much fear around that concept that when I saw my mom turning from the Baptist religion to Buddhism, I was freaking out. I was really freaking out. And then when she did die, I had no idea what to do because I didn't feel the relationship with death was over for her. I felt her still in a karmic loop because she didn't find that true sovereignty and that true power within here on the earth plane. And so it's something I haven't thought about in a long time, but if she had done some inner work before she died, she would have had a completely different experience on the other side. And we could go into the mechanics of death all day long. I'll keep it really light here now, which is find sovereignty in the self and restore your heart. Where has harm been done, either to you or to someone else in your life that needs repair? That's tying up the loose ends. That's finding the love for the other in the self, all in one relationship. And that's making amends. And it's so important before we die that we do that. So I always recommend, now's a good time.
While you're here, while you can do it, yeah.
Yeah, and that could be as easy as picking up the phone and saying, hey, I'm sorry that I did that and it hurt your heart. It wasn't my intention. I was just out of my own alignment, right? I didn't mean to do that. It could mean paying back that friend $10, whatever it is that you owe them, because there's give and take energy exchanges on this planet, and we want to find the rhythm where it's equal and it's in balance. And relationship's the best place to learn that. That's why so many of us are in relationship, is because we need to find where we can give and where we can take so that it's in balance and harmony with the heart. So if I'm taking your time and your energy, such as in a partnership, business relationship, friendship, when it's not necessarily in your highest alignment or mine anymore, we're literally sucking each other's soul essence because we have other places to be. We have other things to learn. And that's a critical one for most of us who walk the face of the earth, because we think we're doing good by another, by not hurting their feelings, by not letting go, by trying to soften a blow. And that's not actually the case. When the timing calls for an end, we have to relinquish any hold we have on another. And it's same with the death process. When it's time to let go, there's something far greater on the other side. And I've tasted it in my own life through these processes of going interdimensionally to see what's there. And, you know, you hear a lot of near-death experiences, and people talk about a lot of love and a lot of light. Unfortunately, I had the experience of seeing the other side and seeing what's happening with souls who are not resolving karma in this lifetime. And when I say karma, I mean when there's so much harm that's been done that they forget who they are. It's either violence to the self or violence to another. And it's not pretty. And I won't go into detail, but it's all real. And it's all navigated here. This is where you find one. This is where you find the rhythm of your own soul. And you make amends with anyone and anything that you need to on the planet. And that's why planetary care is so important. Whether that's planting a tree or just saying thank you to the earth. Thank you for letting me live here with you at this moment in time. Putting appreciation back into your own grids can actually start to ignite that soul light.
And like you say, the power of being the person to give out that olive branch, even if you don't want to. Like, how many times do you forgive someone that's been really stubborn, been really shit, and you give out that olive branch and you go, hey, I'm sorry about where this went, and then instantly they go, no, I'm sorry. But sometimes you need to be that the one that comes forward and does say that, okay, even if you don't believe you were wrong, at that point it doesn't matter. It's like, come forward, be that one to soften the blow and see. And then even if they don't forgive you, you don't have to live with that feeling of, I didn't do enough, or I didn't do what I could have done. Like, it's so freeing to say how you feel, because if you say how you feel and it's still you don't get the result you want, it doesn't kind of matter. Well, it's kind of like balls in your court now. Mm. I've said what I need to say. I apologized. I said that. And obviously there's different examples with different people and things, but it's like, if you feel like you've done all you can do and your conscience is clear and you can look yourself in the mirror and go, okay, I'm happy with who I am and with my decisions that I've made, it's kind of on the other person now. And that can be seen in a heap of different ways. And like you said before, with like a relationship, when you can be in something that might not be serving the both of you, but you've said how you feel, you've put it out there, you've been honest, and whether that person feels the same way or doesn't is kind of on them, because it's like, I can't say or do anymore. I've been straight up. I've been honest. This is who I am. This is all of me. If you don't feel the same way, that's okay. But that's on you. And you have to live with that decision whether you stay or go. But I think it's that, at least if you know you're honest with yourself in the situation, you shouldn't have this guilt in your mind that you've done the wrong thing. So I think it's, yeah, being okay with saying exactly how you feel, no matter what that may be, whether it's good or bad in your head at the time. But it's like, if you only know how you feel, and you can only say how you feel, and stop looking at whether you saying how you feel might not get the outcome you want, because it's like, it's going to give you the outcome you should get. Otherwise, you'll be changing yourself for someone else and just prolonging the inevitable of whatever it is probably imploding on itself anyway. So it's like being straight up in the moment, listening to your soul, listening to your gut, going, okay, what do I want out of this, or how do I feel in this situation? And putting it out there. And if you don't get back what you think you might want, like the whole thing, you don't always get what you want, but sometimes you get what you need. It's kind of that whole thing. You probably will get what you need, and it probably will help you then find the right situation or person that you needed to actually be with or be at or be in. So, yeah, it's a whole listen to yourself and then actually express yourself instead of trying to hide behind an idea that it might give you the wrong result. I was going to ask as well, when you said you felt a bit lost there when your mum passed away, was that because you weren't sure, I guess, which direction to go? You said she was flirting with the idea of the religion, the Buddhist religion. And did you kind of feel like that was that around the time that she passed away? Or was it hard to navigate which direction to go?
For me, it was feeling lost because I didn't have a connection with God. I had a connection with what I thought things should be, because I was being given ideals by society, by religion, by other religions, and then watching my entire world get turned upside down with the loss of a loved one completely set me into panic and into fear and into the complete unknown, because I didn't, you know, being a child, you don't know how to navigate these things unless you're given proper support. And that's one of the things that's missing from our society these days, is the support of people who can see clearer than what we can see in the moment. If I had had a connection with God, with my own internal state of being as a 10-year-old or a 9-year-old or younger, I would have had a completely different result from that death. It took me however long, 20 years? A decade, a couple decades, to get to that spot where I could sit in my heart and just see appreciation for every moment of my life, including my mom's death, rather than seeing that as a tragedy or something lost. Because every moment in time is the most incredible gift that we could possibly imagine if we shift perspective to that state. And that delivers a different outcome in our real world experience. So the loss of self is what had occurred because I didn't have any sense of it.
Do you remember the moment? Was it a defining moment or was it over time and like a linear kind of progression of who you were as a person to get you to that point?
It's, you know, it actually started early on. I had visions when I was a child that I kind of now forget, and I have glimpses back into that space. And I remember standing on a slide when I was, I must have been 6, 7, 8 years old, somewhere in primary school. And I remember standing at the top of the slide and just being sucked into that zone of nothingness and emptiness. And it was peace, and it was bliss, and it was joy. And it only lasted for a few seconds, but it changed my life in that moment, knowing, whoa, something else exists. And I kind of forgot about it, you know. It was there in the back of the mind, but you get so programmed from the time you're young, from the time you enter the womb, really, and you get programmed to think that there is nothing else except what you see. And so that lasted for quite a while. And it wasn't until my late 20s when I really started to wake up. I'd gotten glimpses. Someone had given me Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, when I was 19, after I'd had quite a severe accident. And that set me on course because it felt real. I was like, oh, finally, there's a version of truth out there that I feel is real. And he talks, if you haven't read his work, I highly recommend it. He talks about self-actualization and self-realization through the power of the breath in the present moment, and how the power of the now is it's everything you require to change your life, no matter where you're at. And it's brilliant. And you'll feel the frequency of it. It's real unconditional love. It's real source light. So that did set me on a trajectory. And I had glimpses and moments through my 20s, but I was, I was partying, smoking a lot of pot, drinking, jumping out of airplanes, just living life to the fullest, working for a surf publication and just having, I was having fun. I had a lot of fun in my 20s. And then when I got pregnant with my daughter, I think that was a saving grace. I think probably accidents were to come.
Did you feel as well when you were having fun, it was almost a distraction to how you really felt?
Yeah, I wanted to feel high. I wanted to feel high. I wanted to feel love. And that was the mode. That was the mode in the moment to mask the pain of loss and separation and grief and everything that I hadn't processed from my childhood years.
I had a friend and her dad passed away. And I remember she was really good at school, really good at sports, had lots of friends, and she'd always be so busy. I remember I went and saw her one day and she was a bit down. And she just said, I think I'm just distracting myself with everything I can so I don't feel what I have to feel. And it was pretty heavy to hear that, because it's like, I think you look at someone that's happy from the outside and you go, oh, you've dealt with the pain, you've done the healing, you've done all that. And then them to tell you, no, I've just been really distracted with all these other things in my life so I didn't have to feel what I had to feel. And she obviously had to go through that. It was just delayed though. I think we all have to grieve at some point. And it's probably better to do it sooner rather than later, as bad as it might feel. But like you said, there's so many distractions that you can bring into your life that then you can go, oh, well, I don't have to feel it. But it's like, if you don't feel it, it'll just keep popping back up in different ways, in different places. Like it'll seep into other aspects of your life, whether that's your relationship with your husband or boyfriend or kids or whatever it may be. It's like you need to kind of go head first in that trauma, that pain, that grief, and feel it, and then understand why you feel that way as well. How did that go when, so you said you've had your daughter and that was kind of, did that kind of center you in a way to go, okay, I need to deal with this in a different way than jumping out of planes and going on surf trips and whatever else you were doing?
That wasn't the awakening moment, but that was the life-changing moment to put me on the path of spiritual awakening and self-discovery, because I couldn't use all of those tools I was using to cope. And actually, I remember I was on antidepressants as well, because I couldn't I couldn't cope with my new normal. I had an accident when I was 20 that my legs were crushed. And so my right leg was degloved, left leg broken. And it altered the state of my reality, because going from beautiful body image to, okay, whoa, I don't have two normal legs anymore. And so I didn't cope with that either.
How did that happen? How did the accident happen?
Long story short, essentially I was working on a small island called Martha's Vineyard off of the coast of Cape Cod in the U.S., the Northeast, and I was working as a taxi cab driver. And at that stage, we drove 15-passenger vans, and I was unloading the back of mine, and someone came up behind me, had my best friend in the passenger seat, and it was a colleague from the same company. And he came out to help me unload the van, but had not put the van in park, still in drive, realized it, went back to slam the brake, slam the accelerator instead. So it was life-changing moment that these things happen for a reason. Even then, I was on the wrong path. I wasn't following my higher self, my higher state of guidance. I was going down the track of, getting the best job that you could, going to the best university that you could, so that then I could go into corporate life and kind of sell my soul for money, right? That was my trajectory at that time. And so that gave me my get out of jail free card. And it was the power of appreciation in every moment after that that helped me move into a completely new life. And it was that perspective that I needed to make that moment become the greatest gift that it could have been given. And that itself is a long story. But essentially, take every moment as a gift. Take every moment as a gift. And that's what it will become.
So funny when you look back and at moments, like at the time, you might have been like, oh, I hate this, or I wouldn't have been going that well. And then you look back years later and you go, oh, I'd do anything to be back in that situation, where at the time I can remember being like, I don't want to be here or whatever. And then you look back with a different perspective and you go, oh, if I could just go back for a day, or I could go back for just a moment and feel what I felt back then. And I guess that's the whole thing of trying to really appreciate a moment in a moment. And it can, like you say, be difficult to be at presence, but then like I read this thing and it was just like, think about when you're 80 years old, how much you would pay and how much you would give to be in the very moment you are right now. And you lose track of that because it's your normal life. You wake up, everything's fine, everything's normal, and like you don't have that shift. But it's like every now and again, I'll see someone that's like elderly and they'll have like a walker and someone to be helping them. And I'm like, that's going to be us, all of us, if we're lucky enough to get there. Like not all of us will even get there anyway. And it's trying to have that perspective to go, I am so blessed and so lucky that I am where I am. I am as healthy as I am, and I get to do what I get to do. And with the injury I had, that was like a big, oh shit, like this can all be taken away like that. And I think in those moments, it does give you that real clear perspective shift of everything can get taken away in a moment. And I don't think that should scare you, but I think that should like uplift you into going, okay, well, if it can all get taken away, let's enjoy it while it's here and not be scared of it getting taken away, but just know that it's there and know that it can change. And obviously when you had your accident, that would have changed everything for you in that moment. But then, like you say, looking back, you can appreciate that why it happened, because of what you got out of it.
What happened was interesting because I didn't regret it for a second, even when I was still lying in a hospital bed. I had a team of guides around me. Some people may call them angels. And they were helping me feel appreciation and gratitude for where I was at. And so because I stayed in that frequency band of appreciation and gratitude, even though the moment was not kind, didn't seem kind, right, because there was pain and there was grief, I was still living in this energy field of love. And that helped catalyze all the good things to come. So from that moment, and then the next, and then the next, because the majority of my time, not all of it, but the majority of my time was saying, oh, thank you so much that I am still alive. Thank you so much. I still have two legs. Thank you so much that time is on my side. I'm young. But just looking at all of the good things that still existed. When 9/11 happened, the day that 9/11 happened, I was looking at the TV screen at my university being like, what the, you know, it was probably, I remember it being like maybe 10 minutes in to that being broadcast on air, and my phone rings and it's my attorney solicitor saying, hey, that is the insurance company just paid you out. And it completely changed the trajectory of my life. And what I was shown is that because I stayed in that frequency grid that was above fear, when that event happened, the majority of the world started to cycle downwards, especially in the area that I was in, because that was only a few hours from my house and there were lots of people around me that were very much affected by that pain. But it showed me so that I could show others in the future what happens when you as an individual, you as an individuated being, stay in the power of love, no matter what occurs. Because then if there's a collective cycle of energy that's running where fear overtakes the population, you don't have to have anything to do with it. It can be a completely different life for you. And that's the power of love. That's the power of where we're going. We're sending frequency. And the key is the now, regardless of what it brings. Mm. And it's such a perspective shift for most of us because we haven't operated that way. We've looked from the linear mindset and we've used the mind. But what happens now when you use the heart? It's a completely different feeling. It's a completely different energy. And it brings completely different results.
Mm. It's the whole, like you say, we're conditioned into something bad happens, react in a negative, sad, distraught, depressed way. And it's no, like you, something bad can happen. And like you say, it can be the best thing that could ever happen to you. And it's having that self-awareness as you go through it. Like you're saying, you're in hospital and you're laying on that bed. And I can relate to that when I was in America and I was laying in bed and in the hospital bed as well. And I just remember thinking like, what am I going to learn from this? What am I going to get out of this? And we talked about like the whole Paul Check as the expression, the pain teacher. It's like the more pain you go through, the more you'll probably learn. And in those situations when you're in a lot of pain, physically, emotionally, mentally, it's like, okay, we need to check in on who we are, what we're doing, and what we're going to get out of this. And it's not going to happen overnight. But I guarantee when you go through a large amount of pain like that, that you will find something new in yourself that you probably needed anyway. And I'm not saying that you should always strive to go through pain. But when it does come up in your life, which it always will, like you said, our parents will die one day. Yours obviously happened a lot earlier than you would have liked or expected. But the lessons you got from that obviously create who you are now. And so it's just like a fast forward version of where you were who you were going to become. But you just have to do it at a lot younger age. And that's something that I found through a lot of my close friends or people, even for a while there, it was this trait that I would find in girls that I would date girls and that either their dad had passed away when they were young or had not been in their lives. And it happened about 5 times and like not intentionally, but obviously there's something that they brought to the table that was because I guess they had to grow up in a certain way, or they had to be a certain person, or they had a certain strength about them, or certain mentality, and whatever it was I was attracted to. And it wasn't till we got further along in the relationship that you'd figure out, it's like, oh no, my dad wasn't in my life, my dad passed away. And it was just like, that obviously builds these girls up, or people in general, to become who they really realistically want to be. And it's through that pain of losing such a vital role, like a parent in their life. But what do you think was the biggest lesson you learned when your mum passed away?
To encourage people to find their sense of self young. And that is not easy. But every one of you listening is either a parent or most likely going to be a parent one day. And so if you can assist your children in helping them find their identity, identity of the self, not identity of the egoic world and the egoic mind, but if you can teach them breath, if you can teach them how to love themselves, if you can teach them their center is the most important thing to find, then they'll never need to seek outside of it. And when things like that happen that may rock their world, they will be set up for life. And sometimes some of us need to walk through this pain to get to the other side. It's critical, it's important, but how do we do it? Do we allow grief? Do we allow suffering? Or do we try to push it away? And like you were saying, Dean, about your friend whose dad died, and my own experience with life up until my 30s, was I was hiding from it. And it wasn't necessarily until my later 30s, even. It started early on. It started when my daughter was there, but really allowed that suffering and that pain to be rather than resisting it. Because it's so easy to resist it and to fight. That's what we're trained to do, fight what you don't like. But if you can sit with suffering, if you can sit with pain, if you can sit with grief, and if you can cry, and if you can really allow it to come out, if you can shed the tears, that's what changes the momentum of your life, because you're no longer operating from trauma. You're no longer operating from pain. You're no longer making choices or diving into relationship because you're trying to fill a lonely void. And grief does that for us. Suffering does that for us. It gives us a gift. It gives us a moment, an opportunity to jump to another timeline, to jump to another frame. And so I think there's this cause in life that requires us to be exactly where we need to be at any given moment in time. But most of us want to resist it because it's not fun. But if we can sink into it, regardless of what it is, that's where we get the most growth. That's where we find the most change. But if we're not willing to dive into the heart, which doesn't just contain lightness and love, it contains all things, if we're not willing to dive into that space, then we're still sitting outside the self. We're still sitting outside the bigger picture of who we are.
When you're dealing with people, what do you think the biggest thing that is their resistance of why they haven't come to you sooner, or when they have come to you, why they haven't gone into that?
Because it doesn't feel good.
They just don't want to deal with the pain.
We as a species don't want to deal with the pain. We don't want to look at the hard stuff. We want to avoid it. We want to take drugs. We want to drink. We want to focus on love and lightness. If you're into spirituality, most people will run to the light to avoid the dark. We don't want to look at the shadows. We don't want to look at the grief. And when we do, that's when we're going to jump to the other side and make a life that's fulfilling and rewarding beyond what we could possibly imagine.
How responsible do you feel in those situations when you are dealing with someone like that and you obviously want to help them, but you know within helping them that you're going to obviously bring up this stuff that could also hinder them? Like, how do you balance the two?
I make it very clear to anyone who works with me, you got to be willing to feel the pain. You've got to be willing to walk to the other side. And if you're not, that's okay. We can go where you want to go, but we're not going to get the real results. We've got to feel the suffering.
You're opening up the door to healing, but the door to healing goes, the good and the bad can come through it.
Absolutely. And what I see when people are really willing to relinquish the self, meaning the egoic identity, and come to terms and come to peace, healing comes straight away. So I've worked with people who are these, they're like these quantum masters in disguise. Everyone is, but some souls are much further advanced. So they've suffered neurological pain and damage through the nervous system. And they're able to turn their quantum networking system back on immediately to heal if they can get out of the emotional pain and the judgment of what others have done or the judgment of what they've done to themselves or others. And it's been fascinating to watch because it shows me how capable the human processing system is. And so if we turn to drugs or medication or anything to mask the pain, we're missing the real gift of the human heart. Because when someone can really forgive and accept all things just as they are, they can make these incredible shifts in consciousness that defies time and space. They can change matter. So when someone's ready to get to that space, that's when the real healing begins, because that means they're taking back the full power of what this quantum operating system called the heart can do. And that's when you see advanced beings come online.
Mm.
And there's not many around yet, but they're coming. You're one of them. I can see that straight away. Yeah, they're coming. And I'm talking about the real gift of God within that can create miracles in the cell, in the cellular state. Because we're looking, again, at these deities or at these ideologies of what God is, but it's actually in the blood. It's in the veins. It's in the human genome. And when you get to that level of processing, then you find God. Then you find the spark of life. Then you start to move matter with your mind. And it's really cool to watch.
What would you say for like skeptics that would, when you would say this to someone, what would you say to them that wouldn't believe in this or wouldn't kind of see it the same way that you do?
I would start to do a search on YouTube and Google and just start look up miracle healings. And you will find people all over the world that are experiencing phenomenal results just by dealing with pain in a different way. And so definitely don't take my word for it. Do your research. Always do your research, no matter what you're presented with. And then tune into the self. How does that feel? The mind will want to give a block, right? Because the mind will want to know answers. But some things defy gravity.
It's just going into things with, I think, the open mind and not that, again, you're conditioned to think or feel a certain way. And it's just going into, I don't know. It's like when you break it all down, you can, like, why we're here, why we're on this planet, like the source of everything, even just say, I always say, just say you did find a God and he came down. It's like, okay, who also created you? And it's just like this never ending, like Russian dolls of existence. And I think it's one of those things where it's like you could spend your whole life questioning something that do you really even want to know the answer for? It's like the whole, what is it, Guardians of the Galaxy is like 47. That's the, and you're like, well, what do you want? Do you want more? Do you want less? Like, well, that's, like as silly as it sounds, it's like, well, how far do you go down this rabbit hole of trying to explain something that doesn't really have an explanation? And even if someone does come up with the best explanation you've ever heard, you go, okay, well, who came up with that? And it's just like this never ending. So that's just in my head. So it's like, if you can't actually explain why something is, just enjoy it for what it is instead of trying to break it all down.
Sit in the moment, see what occurs for you, and also go to the quantum spark within. So we've been taught to look outside, the Russian doll analogy. We're looking external, so okay, the cosmos, the universe, how infinity exists. But what if you went the other way and you started to look back into the cell and the cellular light and the cellular flame? You're going to find an internal engine and an internal spark and an internal dialogue that set the whole thing alight. Mm. And that's what I see as the God spark and the God flame. And then it replicates.
Even just consciousness. Explain consciousness.
Consciousness exists because you were you. You were that original force, and we're living in a holographic reality that gets to reflect it and bounce it back. So the you are me, I am you dialogue, and that whole dialectic, I see that as eternal existence.
Well, I think it comes back to the whole thing, you being accepting of death, is because, and I'm accepting of it as well, because I don't believe consciousness dies. I like you say, it just transforms into a new thing. And it was funny that the whole near-death experience, and I've not so much near-death experience, but I know when I've gone to places within breath work, and I remember one time clearly that I went pretty far with it, and I went to a point where I became okay with death completely. Like, honestly, in the moment, doing the breath work, if I died in that moment, I had completely accepted it. And because I'd accepted it, I had no fear. And I just remember just being completely at peace with every single thing in my life. And then as I kind of came back to what seemed like reality, every worry that I had, every issue that I had, every little thing that I had going on in my life that wasn't good, evaporated. And then I came back to me. And when I came back to me, I was like the happiest I'd been in a long time. And I was like, you say that, getting back to yourself, and like, I'm living proof that if you are not where you need to be, or there's things that worry you, if you can really go in just to your breath, really go into it, you can clear your mind completely. And I think the idea, again, of being accepting of death is such a powerful thing, and it will make you way happier, because it's looking at this thing without fear. It's looking at it with not excitement, but it's just like, it's just another path. It's another part of like our experience. And it's kind of like the caterpillar talking to the butterfly. It's like, is it going to be scary? It's like, it's going to be fucking amazing. And it's like going into it with that mindset. It's like, why not? If you don't even know what's on the other side, or like you say, you've kind of feel like you've been in points, it's like, accept that it's going to happen, forgive the people you need to forgive, be okay within yourself when you go, and then when you do go, it's probably going to be a much nicer experience than when you take that with you. Because like you say, once you're there, you're there. And as much as we feel like we can't say stuff to people that are gone, they also can't say stuff to us. And I think a lot of people have regret when people die, because they want to say something, or I want to do something, and it's like, they probably have the same feeling. And they're on the other side and they can't say anything either. They're just there.
Make amends now. So don't wait till just before you're going to die, because then the rest of your life experience, you won't feel shame, you won't feel guilt. And that can build up underneath the skin and actually can create sickness and disease. So
you see it in spiteful, angry people all the time. You see them get all these different diseases and issues, and like, you're carrying all this stuff with you. And it's like you said, those miracles, when those miracles happen, it's like people release this anger and hatred and fear, and they just go, oh, and it's like their bodies start to heal. They start to get back to them. And you say, it's like, doctors will say, oh, it's a miracle. I'm like, it isn't. And it's like, you create your own miracle through letting go of the things you need to let go of. Have you seen that firsthand, when people have let go and you can see a physical change in their body?
I've seen it. The most powerful example I can probably give is something I witnessed within myself. And so there is an instance where I felt very betrayed and abused because there wasn't communication. It was just all words were needed. That's all that were needed, and that didn't occur. And because we'd had that understanding, we just, if we want this agreement to come to an end, we just tell each other, perfect, you know, that's okay, we let go. And because the words weren't given to me, I felt so much abandonment and betrayal that it showed up for me in anger. So I was angry at this person. This only occurred maybe 3 years ago, but I couldn't, the anger was very real, right? I don't bypass the emotions that are there. And so that anger was there. And so I had to process, okay, how do I forgive? And so then I forgave. And because I know we all do the best with what we have. So I could forgive. I could forgive this person quite easily. But I still had an energy in my body that hurt. It didn't feel good. And because I'm hyper aware, I was just tuning in. I was asking Source through my guides, how do I release this energy? How do I release this pain? Because logically, I had completely forgiven him. I'd completely forgiven the situation. And what I received back was, you need to forgive the self. And so with that understanding came this wave of energy. It just washed through. And it was the most palpable, powerful current of forgiveness that I got to physically understand. And it moved every other energy out of the way, because I hadn't forgiven myself for anything that I had done to create that relationship the way it was.
That's powerful. Hey, we always forgive others, but you don't forgive yourself for putting yourself there. You don't think about it. So many people, like you say, you've forgiven what the other person's done to you, but you haven't forgiven yourself for putting yourself in that situation to have that person do that.
And the gift that we each provided for each other to show each other how we could grow up, how we could refine our skills, how we could refine love for the self. And at that moment, all I could do was look with just such gratitude and appreciation for him and for me. It was an incredibly life-changing moment, because that had never occurred before. There had been a lot of logical forgiveness, a lot of heart-based love, where I just loved everyone for who they were, regardless of what circumstance came. But that forgiveness of the self was the most potent and powerful energy force I've ever felt. It was real love. It was real, unconditional love.
I wanted to touch on it because I've been really dwelling and thinking about this whole idea of unconditional love. Because it's so rare, like it's such a rare thing, and people are gonna have me sick of talking about it because I keep bringing it up. But it's this thing where it's like loving someone unconditionally means that you just love them for who they are, not for what they bring to you, not for what they do for you, not for how often they see you, not for all these other things that we expect out of someone or the condition we put on you loving them, even if they love you back. Like, that's the thing. It's like, I will love you if you love me back. And it's like, you're putting your love into someone else's control. Every time you put, I will love you if, you're giving that other person control over your love. It's like, you've just got to love someone for them. And this is the big takeaway, though, that you can love someone from afar and you don't have to be around the people you love. You can love them and know your boundaries, know your space needed to still be there and love them, and that's okay. You don't have to love someone and see them every day. You don't have to love someone, expect them to message you every day. You don't have to love someone and expect the world from them. And I think once you realize that and you can love someone from afar and just enjoy them for a person and love them for who they are, it's such a, again, a freeing feeling, because it's like, this is me. This is who I am. This is how I feel. And don't let them alter you into being something else, but instead just be you and be okay with the fact that you might even not even be with the person you love, but that's okay. And I think that feeling of relief when you do love someone and you want the best for them, and even if they're with someone else, you can still love them for who they are, is such a freeing feeling, because you're not holding on to this jealousy or resentment or anger that, oh, it's not me. And it's like, it's probably not you for a reason, and that's okay. And once you have that feeling of unconditional love and go, oh, that's what it is. And how do you feel with that, with the whole idea of unconditional love, and how has that played a role in your life?
I think unconditional love is a concept until you get that all love is conditional based on what someone does or does not do to you. Unconditional love, to me, as it's been shown through the Creator's eyes, is even if someone is the nastiest version of themselves to you and they pour hatred or anger or torture or violence to you, can you still love them from a space of separation by saying, no, I'm no longer going to give consent, so I'm going to walk away, but I still love you? And that is a forgiveness of the self that's unheard of, because you still have to set boundaries. You still have to make sure that you've given consent to whatever they're doing. And if you can love someone or something so much that you say no, that's when things change. That's when you change your life and you change them, because you're no longer willing to do something that's out of integrity for you or for them. So you've got the space of energy. I call it the space of in between. So the space in between the cell. And all it is light. All it is this formless version of light. So it's not dark, it's not light, it's not, you know, opposing color contrast. It's just energy. It's just an energy field. And all matter is created from it. And all matter exists. It literally is all things. That's love. Because it doesn't judge what you do with it. So you can take this energy and you can create form. And that's what we've done here on planet Earth. So we are using this energy field to create. And this love of the Creator, of Source, or of all things, it doesn't judge what you do. But on the earth plane, we're so full of judgment of what's right and what's wrong that we forget that everybody has the right to be. Everybody has the right to choose how they want to exist. So if that's someone doing harm in your world or creating violence on a larger scale, you have the right to say no to what they choose. But they also have the right to use this source love as they wish. And that's the hardest thing to get your head around, because violence is something we all want to say no to, whether that's coming in the form of anger, abuse, fighting, or corruption in authority. We all want to say, no, that's not right, right? But that original essence of creation says play. Do what you choose. That's unconditional love. It even accepts violence. It doesn't condone it, but it accepts it. It accepts that we have free will.
But it's almost being selfless.
It is the space of selfishness and selflessness all in one, because you also have the right to say, no, I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to choose that. So if it's a relationship, for example, if someone wants to be controlling or manipulative in that, they have that right if that's how they want to choose to be. But you have to be so selfless and so selfish that you say to them, actually, I love you so much, I'm going to walk away, because I see that could be harmful to you and to me. But you don't judge them for what they choose. And because of the way we've been trained on the earth to make things right or wrong or good or bad, it's a space that not many of us get to be. And it's a hard space to hold. It's a really hard space to hold. But that's what I see unconditional love as.
Mm.
It's allowing us each to perform and to choose how we want to choose.
Nah. I almost feel like it's more of a therapy session in a way, because I definitely need to hear some of this for sure. Because it is, yeah, it's a tricky one to navigate, especially obviously you get feelings involved with something and it does almost, you kind of know the direction you need to go, or you know what you need to do, and then feelings and love and stuff get involved and it wipes the board clear of any decision making you thought you did need to do, so.
And that's the trickiness of it, because most of our decision making is coming from pain. It's coming from unprocessed emotions or trauma that we're still holding on to.
And running away from more of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You don't want to go through hurt to get to the other side. Let's just make it okay.
Mm. But like you say, you're prolonging the inevitable almost.
Or you're even making it worse.
Or you're even making it worse, yeah.
Because that unconditional love, that space in between, it doesn't want anyone to hurt. It's not about harm. It's about fulfilling your destiny, which is to come back to that space of love. But if you hold someone else down on that particular trip, right? If you actually create this karma where you don't allow someone else to breathe and center in their own version of the truth, then you harm both yourself and them. And so it's this tricky space to navigate, because to know it, you need to know what it feels like. And to know how it feels is to give up everything that you've ever known. And that's where the breath can take you. It's the only space that actually exists.
Mm.
Everything else is creation, unfolded as the mind has made.
Mm. Yeah, it's where the clarity comes in. Very clear clarity. Talking about breath, we'll segue over to something that's also very important, is water. Now, it's pretty insane. When I grew up, we always drank rainwater, and you obviously get accustomed to what rainwater tastes like, and then you'll come to a city or you go to a bigger town and you'll drink the tap water and you'll go, what is in this? Because it doesn't taste anything like what I was used to. Now, you've created something to put in your water. Can you explain exactly what it's called and what it does?
Sure. So water's, in essence, the life force of creation. Keeping it relatively simple, water tends to transmute thought and alter energy streams if you know what it can do. And because this has been a controlled society, and I see it as a slave state, because fear has been the dominating energy force on the planet, it's been manipulated. Water has been manipulated essentially to fulfill that agenda, to keep you in a slave state where you don't know your own power of your breath. You don't know the own beating of your heart. And water can help get you back there faster. So it's been manipulated with frequency and also with particular contaminants. Now, contaminants don't matter if you can alter the frequency. But if you can't alter the frequency, then contaminants mean the world. So right now, through tap water, we have running fluoride in most parts of the world. We have chloride. We have pharmaceuticals. We have all sorts of agro-industrial chemicals that are seeping into the water system. Even rainwater, as pure as we think it may be, and it is a pure version of that source, of the water source, because it's coming through vortexes of energy, through natural grids, right? It's gone through a purification process as it's entered into the water stream through the clouds. But as it sits in the tanks, it starts to revert back to the original form before it went through that process. And so if you look in the sky, we're in a closed loop system. Okay, let me start with that. We're in a closed loop system. So everything that's circulating through the rain has been circulating through the water itself on planet Earth. And unfortunately, we've polluted it. We've really polluted it with toxic components. Everything's going to sink back into the water table in one form or another. And if you don't remove those contaminants before you drink them, they actually alter the state of your body because they'll start to build up in the cells. And so that could be even just lead from the pipes in your house. And it could be heavy metals from certain runoff. And that starts to dampen the mechanisms of the human system. Now, the human system was designed to thrive. It was designed to biologically alter everything and anything that you needed at any time. If the cell's electromagnetic force is working potently, it can alter your DNA based on where you're at in any given spot in time. That's how you really create miracles in physical form. But because we've been so shut down by the water streams on the planet, we've kind of forgotten that gift of life, what our own biological systems can do. So if you start to alter the Earth's grids and their electromagnetic field or the field within the water, you start to become more of who you were originally designed to be. Now, most of us have started getting on to the fact that purifications, what we need to do, even rainwater, purify it before you drink it. Some people are getting into the hydrogen aspect, that hydrogen, a little bit of that extra hydrogen gas is going to give you a lift. Absolutely. And then some people start to think, okay, I'm going to bless my water. I'm going to give it good thoughts because they've seen experiments with Emoto. If you haven't, have a look. Emoto and Veda Austin, some of the leading researchers in the world in consciousness and water. So Emoto he's since passed, but he did experiments looking at rice or water and analyzing the crystals, where on one hand he gave them loving thoughts. He gave them beautiful vibrations, right? I love you. I forgive you. I'm kind to you. And on the other hand, he sent hate and he sent destructive thought forces. And you could see that show up in the crystalline photography. And you could see that show up in the rice over time, right? It's brilliant. Look it up. Emoto. And Veda Austin has taken that. And there are many others. These are just two of the forefront in my mind. But Veda Austin has taken that a step further. And she's from New Zealand, and she's brilliant. Look up her work. So she's been able to photograph and capture how consciousness shows up in water. And she has people around the world doing this. So she'll give the water a thought, and it will literally show up. It will literally show up as a fractalized image. So it could be a bird. Thinking of a bird, putting the photo of a picture of a bird, and the water will actually mimic it. I'm talking crazy stuff that is captured scientifically.
How so? Like it just comes up as a crystallized image of a bird.
Literally, yes. Literally, you're programming the water with your thoughts. And you do that every day with your own self-talk, because our bodies are made up of what is being considered by forefront science now 99.9% water molecules, 60 to 70% volumetrically based on where you're at in your life. But if you're looking from a molecular structure, there are scientists that are saying, oh, we could actually be just about all water. And she's showing how consciousness affects what occurs in water, and she's showing it brilliantly. So water is the stream of life. Water is capturing the stream of life here on the planet. So if you can put your water in an energy form and in a vibration that alters the matrix around you with love, you start to see a different reality show up. So that's what I'm providing in Life Effects. So Life Effects, Living Water Droplets, they're primordial source minerals. So they're coming from biotite. They're coming from black mica in Japan. They've been given a heat extraction process. So they're liquefied. And you add 1 mL to 1 liter of any water, and it will literally take any of the contaminants. So we are talking fluoride, chloride, heavy metals, pharmaceuticals, agro-industrial chemicals, and they're flocculated from the water stream, and they show up as a sediment. They coagulate, and they show up as a sediment at the bottom of your container. So you're physically seeing scientific proof of cleaning the water. And what you have is you have an altered structure due to these minerals. So you have H3O2. And then you actually have a highly charged conductive medium in which to put your thoughts. And it starts to alter the body's electromagnetic grid. And then the body can start to operate as it was designed. And so for me, what I've witnessed with these minerals over this time period is that if I put my own thoughts and vibrations of love into the product, into the brand, it started to alter how people felt. They started to feel love. My first investor in this project, she just called me up one day and she said, I just know I need to have some of those minerals. And she wasn't willing to try them. It was probably a year after I started, because she's a big environmentalist. And they come in plastic. Some are glass, but some of them come in plastic. At that time, it was only plastic. And she wasn't willing to even try them because she was in fear of what plastic did to the earth. But she called me up one day and she said, can you just use a recycled bottle or something? Because I just know I need that.
I need to try this. I don't care. Just give it.
So what happened to her is she said she just took one drink and she had, within 10 minutes, her heart just expanded and she just felt love for the entire planet. And she just started crying and releasing all this grief and feeling all these emotions of love encoded within her. The water just gave her operating system a bit of a boost to allow that to occur. So my intention behind the product and behind the brand matters just as much as anything else. This company is not about greed. It's about restoring the sovereignty of the soul. And because that's my intention behind sending it out, it starts to create these energy waves to signal that for whoever drinks it. Mm. People seem to pick it up where they're currently at in their consciousness. So for some people, just because it's highly mineralized, highly charged, hydrating water, they actually feel the results and the benefits of hydration and what hydration does to the cell. So athletes and intuitives, they're the ones who seem to pick it up the most because they're the most sensitive with the physical form and or the energetic form, right? With the sense of the intuitive, some of them are showing how it's altering, you know, fifth dimensional consciousness, but the athletes are just like, whoa, I can feel it buzzing in my bones. You know, it depends where we're at. And some people don't like it at all. Some people aren't interested. And I looked at that and I see it's actually a lot to do with the self-worth and how we're really ready to care for our bodies, how we're really ready to care for ourselves. Because I'm wondering, oh, is something wrong with it? What's going on? And it always comes back to, no, we're not ready to receive that yet. Mm-hmm. We're still going through our pain. We're still going through our suffering. We're still going through our growth, because pain is where all the growth lies, right? But it can really assist consciousness expansion, if that's what we're ready for, or it can just assist the physical body in coming up to the shape that it was originally designed to do. So we're looking at water purification aid. We're looking at it as an electromagnetic buzz for the body cells. And we're looking at it, if you want to go there, we're looking at it altering DNA. And I can show you some different results in labs and also from firsthand accounts. And what we've been witnessing in animals has been quite interesting. But it's really showing the intelligent design that our bodies were designed to have. And water's where it starts. Water's where it begins. So if you're looking for an ultra-high source of electrolytes, this is what Life Effects is. It's a high-potency electrolyte derived from organic original mineral salts in their unadulterated state that has a very particular signal to the body's RNA and DNA composition. And I'm not sure that I can scientifically define that, other than we had a researcher in 2002 had gotten a hold of black mica, and she was studying black mica, and she proposed really a counter theory to evolution. She said, oh, I think we originated between the sheets of black mica, because the RNA of the human body was identical in form and in structure to the black mica sheets. So what we've seen has been pretty incredible. But again, it meets people where they're at. Some people don't like it. Some people want it for hydration. Some people want it for purification. Other people are using it for consciousness expansion. So it will...
Ticks a few different boxes depending where you're at on the...
Exactly.
On your own journey.
And so for me, it's ticked every box that I've needed, because I was quite sick when I got it maybe 6 years ago. Just a lot of emotional stress that I still hadn't processed. In relationship, actually, with my son's dad. We're all good now. But at the time, I wasn't willing to leave, and it was what needed to happen. And there was also a buildup of toxins and heavy metals in my own body. And so I got to the stage where I had MS symptoms. And it was pretty profound, because I knew I was about to go down. And I just started saying, please bring me something. And the universe gave me the Medical Medium book. I don't know if you've read that. It's a way of caring for the body, literally just with plants. Just with fruits and vegetables. And so what I did is I just got energetically, that's it. That's what I needed to heal. And I'd kept on intuitively, you know, hearing, just go raw. You'll be fine. Just go raw. And at the time I was eating meat and a lot of fats, and proteins, because that's what I thought with my mind would do the trick, and it didn't. And so I went, you know, all fruits and veggies, cut out every bit of protein, no nuts, no avos, no fats, nothing. And within 30 days, I was a new person. And I was on celery juice every day and just eating so clean. And my physical body was able to purge the heavy metal overload, right? And it was the emotional components I was also working on, but the physical body was back. But then about a year and a half after getting really hooked on celery juice, because that's all that my diet really needed to keep me above the line, I just couldn't do it anymore. So I just said again, give me something else, please, universe. I can't be chained to my juicer in my kitchen. And then these minerals popped in.
I got converted to the celery juice thing from an ex-girlfriend that was just like, try it. And I definitely push back on things, especially things that are good for me. I don't know why I'm stubborn, but it's a lot of the things that I preach about, like going in float tanks, celery juice, breath work, all this meditation, I was, that's stupid. Why would you do that? And the celery juice was one where I was like, it's just celery juice. But I remember every time I would take it before eating anything else first thing in the morning, I'd have so much more energy in the day. And I was like, okay, I need to touch it to know it's real. But like you're saying, if you can get that through not having to juice for an hour a day, because it is quite the process of doing it. But yeah, if there's other ways that you can get that same kind of energy boost out of not juicing for an hour, why not?
And that's what I did. It took me a little while to believe that anything else would work, because I was so convinced that the mineral salts healed me, and they did. But I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. I was going to say, if I preach something, it's because, like, I didn't used to preach it. Like, I'm very stubborn when it comes to believing things. But then when I feel it, I'll let everyone know how good it is, because it's like, okay, this is real.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what happened. And that's how I am as well. I really need to know it. And so when the universe delivered these minerals a few weeks later, I was like, okay, let's have a look. And I was able to see what they could do. I could see what they could do in water. And then I started to drink them. And my health went from having to have celery juice to stay above the line to just going, you know, it was just, I didn't need to eat a strict diet anymore. I didn't need to keep any standards going, because the mineral salts from this black mica, it was like it was all that was required for me to stay alive and thrive. Mm. And look, I think that has its benefits and its pros and its cons, because then I was, you know, like, oh, I can eat again. I can have whatever I want.
Yeah.
And that in itself isn't necessarily a good thing either. Balance is key, but they seem to do the trick for me. And everyone's different. So I'm definitely not someone who's going to sit here and preach, this is going to solve your problems, because it's not. Nothing is. You're the only one who can do that. But for me, this has been a catalyst and a driving force for my own personal expansion in every area of my life.
No, that's great. I got a few more questions before we wrap it up. And now I kind of always end on these, but I'm going to ask you something. What are you scared of? Obviously not death.
Well, death and dying, maybe one of those, only because of how much I love. So how much do I love? How much would I go to the ends of the earth to help someone else? And I've found in my experience that I'll go all the way. And I can't do that anymore. And it's only in this moment, as you ask the question, that I'm really understanding that I've got to stop giving so much to those who aren't willing to receive, because that could catalyze a process when I do die. It could take me somewhere I don't want to be. So thank you for that, because that just solved a riddle in my own life. Yeah, if we don't go through the pain process and let people go, they can become anchors and chains. And we can do that on the physical and the interdimensional levels. And I've been doing that. I've been trying to help all souls.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Dean.
Well, I'm here.
Appreciate it.
I was going to say, if you could go back in time and tell your younger self a lesson, what lesson would you tell her?
Love yourself just the way that you are. You don't need to look better. You don't need to do better. You don't need to be better. You're perfect right now.
I like that. And the last one, when you are gone, how do you want to be remembered?
Someone who's changed the world from the inside out. Someone who's found love within.
Perfect. Well, Zara, thank you so much for coming on. I'm glad you can appreciate and enjoy the space here and feel comfortable to share all your thoughts and wisdom with everyone and myself. And definitely got some things out of this that just make me appreciate being able to do this, because it's like lessons for myself. And it's like anyone else listening is a byproduct, and doesn't matter if it's sometimes like, okay, I need to actually hear certain things. So I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks so much. And we all do. And you've given me some feedback as well. That's a real catalyst for my own life. So thank you.
Perfect.
So much appreciation.
All right. If people want to find your book, where would they find your book, and how would they get in contact with you if they want to do a session or see you for anything?
The book's available on Amazon throughout the world. If you search The Heart's Portal, Awakening God Within to Navigate Beyond Great Divide into New Earth, just search The Heart's Portal and you'll find it.
I'll put a link in the show notes. Okay. And stuff as well. Perfect. But yeah.
And if you're in Australia, it's also available at lifeeffectslivingwater.com, where you can also find Life Effects and learn more. You can see the lab tests and hear results.
Amazing. We'll link it all to the people and get it out there.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Zara.
Thank you so much, Dean.
Okay, bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.